Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Japan's greatest victory, Britain's worst defeat, the capture of Singapore 1942 by Colonel Tsuji. We're up to probably 38, 39 episode, and the fourth mini episode inside this pamphlet, which this person has read. And in fact, look, on one aspect, as a sort of academic-y type of person, you couldn't ask for anything more. There's a person describing the activity and actions of the army, then you see the citations. That's a way of sticking it all together. You read other information coming up, and then finally you read the pamphlet that he actually wrote to his Japanese troops that everyone read. Now, I was overheard trying to get into podcasting, and people said, you sound as though you're reading from the Bible, and why not that book? That's been thrown out by the Blue Mountains Library. If it's been rejected by the Blue Mountains Library, it's just a hopeless book, you know. And the Japanese, they lost the war. You know, it's all complete rubbish. Well, yeah, it's the complete rubbish which took a whole heap of Australian captives and did a lot of damage overall. And it's not necessarily unique to this theatre. There's lots of other episodes in history, including we also have our own rubbish and do a lot of damage with it ourselves, and it's sort of like a plumber. You've got to fix a pipe. You've got to stick your arms down some pretty unpleasant holes from time to time to actually work out what's going on. So the actual hard yard works of working out what's going on actually requires to get in deep and analyze these things and just read them, you know, from end to end thoroughly, and then pick up, you know, where there's these unusual, you know, constructs. Like the last episode, I was supposed to start reading from here, which is chapter 9, The Battle. Which, you know, they've dismounted, they've invaded, they're holding central, and now they're going into battle. This is the next section. But it took me, a whole 40 minutes, and I'm trying to aim for 40 minute podcasts now, in terms of just my cardiac rehab and moving ahead. There's things I'm pleased at, but, I'm sure the neuropsychs and other things will find other problems for me to improve. However, there's a point. Now, so there's the 47 non-ai, or unemployed samurais, out of work, destitute samurai. I suppose destitute samurai. And their real effect in this place, in terms of that if you only have one method of achievement, you have to make continual compromise, and it sort of gets out of control, that there's only one way of being a samurai, and that's being the samurai code. And it's built up in this 47 samurai, and also these unemployed samurais and the people who are shunned by Japan wound up in Thailand. Yet, with history going around, it's going back in. And this is, I see a lot of parallels between this and some of the going on today within our very domestic, very purer than pure Australian society. I see situations where there's only one way of doing something, and there's this exclusion of people, and this loss of moral navigation coming through, and the rewriting of history, and saying certain histories aren't right, and things like that. And it's also very interesting to know the real strong ignorance these Japanese people, and I think death would have said most of the people at this time would not have any knowledge of the Muslim culture or anything like that. So let's read this story as we come along. The Battle, Chapter 9. 1. The Long Voyage, Sweltering March. All has been for this. So when I was heard reading this, they said, what the heck are you reading this? and it seems over the top. When you encounter the enemy landing, regard yourself as an avenger, come at last face to face with his father's murderer. So, your own father's murderer. The discomforts of a long sea voyage, the rigours of sweltering march have been but months, watching and waiting for the moment when you may slay the enemy. Here before you is a man whose death will lighten your heart of its burden of brooding anger. If you fail to destroy him utterly, you can never rest in peace. And the first blow is the vital blow. You know, like, this is sort of, I think we had the story, I remember we were sort of discussing this, and we came up with the term preemptive revenge. So someone's just minding their own business, you go up and give them a killer punch so they can't, so you can revenge them ahead of the time of the insult, the return to you. So a Swiss coward punch or something like that we'd call it. Or preemptive revenge, the doctrine of preemptive revenge, which, you know, you get on and you realise, oh, gee, that's a bit stupid, isn't it? You know, revenge is after the case and you get in the head to revenge, but revengeance is actually in that 47th samurai. Squalls and mists and knights are our allies. Westerners, being a very superior people, very effeminate and very cowardly, have an intense dislike of fighting in the rain or mist or at night. Night in particular, though excellent for dancing, they cannot conceive as a proper time for war. This is, if we seize upon it, lies our great opportunity, and that is definitely true. We've got birds coming up here. Sweat running into the eyes. Since it makes it difficult to take proper aim when shooting, it is necessary to bind a cloth around the temples beneath the steel helmet, that the sweat may be absorbed before reaching the eyes. Also, it means that you dress a bit like a samurai, I suppose. Keep the sun at your back. To fight facing the sun not only makes taking aim difficult, but it means that the enemy can clearly see us, while we cannot discover them. From the ancient times, great generals have always fought with the sun behind them. Choose the time and direction of your attack carefully. Bullets travel further, targets appear nearer. Hot air offers less resistance than cold. Bullets travel further through it. Sun rays are strong and objects stand out clearly. Hence, it's easy to judge your target to be nearer than it actually is. You should bear these points in mind when shooting. Be considerate to weapons. As a result of excessive external and internal heat, gun barrels may expand efficiently. Recoil and counter-recoil mechanisms may be impaired. Limit the rate and period of fire within reasonable bounds. Check your weapons periodically. If you do what repairs you can, and when you rest, treat your weapon calmly and give it the protection from the direct rays of sun. Hindering the fight of the enemy. To check the withdrawal of enemy forces, one's your principal aim should be to outflank the enemy and gain control of the catchment area, wells and springs to his rear. Well, I suppose that's true. We've also got, there's a little digital tag in the side here, this book. Guarding strategic areas. When keeping guard over natural resources, railways, harbours, small bodies of troops will be left to control large areas, and much ingenuity will be required of them. By constructing robots and winning the natives over to our side, or utilising natural obstacles such as cliffs, dense forests and marshlands, you must seek to tire the enemy without exhausting yourselves. Together with taking proper measures to ensure your own water supplies, you should contrive always denying water to the enemy. And it's interesting that they understood that they had to take the water to Singapore as a hinge point. You should also exercise particular vigilance at night. At times the rain or mist, you should ensure as far as possible that if the enemy launches an attack, it can only be from a very considerable distance away during the heat of the day. There you go. Anti-gas precautions, and we had this gas thing, you know, they initially thought. Do not disregard your respirators. There is a possibility that the present enemy, unlike the Chinese enemy, may use gas. If you discard your respirators as being a nuisance, it cannot help you in time of need. Movement with respirators fitters. In hot climates, when standing still, it's easy enough to wear a respirator for an hour or more, but to wear it for much more than an hour while on the march or fighting is more than can reasonably be expected. Movement or operations in complete anti-gas equipment should be limited to 15 minutes. If the time is exceeded, the soldier becomes markedly exhausted. The special care must be taken to allow him time for recovery. Movement of horses with respirators fitted should generally be restricted to 15 minutes at a time. putting on your respirator. When fitting the respirator over your face, it is apt to slip because of the sweat and prove very troublesome to fix. Put your channel wind inside the mask, and using this as a steady, pull the side strap strongly backwards and upwards, and both hands, taking care the mask is firmly correctly over the forehead. Care with the respirator. After the use, it is essential to dry the respirator, removing all sweat with a cloth. Keep the canister dry. Because the damp is common in tropical regions, you must keep a stopper fitted in the base of the respirator canister and oil paper firmly attached. When landing and crossing rivers, grasping the flexible hose to the water, no water enters it. And again, do not forget the canister stopper. Do not wear anti-gas clothing except next to your skin. If you wear a rubber cape next to your naked skin, expecting it to be less hot that way, you will only on the contrary, expose yourself to even more to the direct heat of the sun's rays, and what's more, you will render yourself more liable to harm from gas. You must always wear some clothing beneath the rubber cape to relieve the heat a little. When in full anti-gas equipment, it is permissible at times to pour water over the anti-gas clothing. For signals troops, water for the radio earth. In the dry season, ground resistance of the radio earth is extremely strong, and in stony places, the sand of the coast, you should pour plenty of water onto ground, the earth. If the water is not available, you may bury in the ground a quantity of crushed melon, papaya and vegetables of high water content and insert the radio earth into this. Or you should select a place where the area of trees and grass, you may sometimes find that 200 or 300 meters of old insulated wire, longer the better, stretched along the ground, will serve as an effective substitute for earth. Points to note on radio signals. 1. Special care must be taken to keep the radio free of drink. For this, A. If the crystal becomes dense, its oscillation powers is impaired or completely lost. We're not in use, keep it wrapped in a greased piece of paper. This is pretty amazing that they actually had to use the crystal as a oscillator, as the diode. In the wet weather, the super receiver in the current use soon ceases local oscillations on shortwave. Care must be taken that tubes and battery are dry. C. Since both transmission sets use army signals units and fixed transmission sets are high voltage, special precautions must be taken in wet weather, damp or drops of rain before loading high voltage. It's necessary to dry the set either with an electric fan or a warmth generated by switching on the filament alone. The pigment of Empire tube used for connecting wire through the set melts in heat and the wire becomes glued together with adverse effect on the insulation. Keep the batteries dry as possible and keep them in a cool place. Since air-cooled engines often suffer in hot weather from insufficient cooling, it's necessary when running them to watch the temperature of the cylinder heads and avoid setting the engines on fire. Because of the static interference, it's frequently difficult to use medium wave. In keys, short circuit through sweat from hands or reception is rendered difficult by short circuits in receivers resulting from sweats falling from head or forwards and ears. When you use a semaphore, since the strong rays of the sun have an overstimulated effect on your eyes, it's essential for the signal to wear protective glasses for signaling by reflected rays or direct sunlight. Red is the most effective color. Arrangement for watches of signal troops. Signal work is tiring, and watches for signal troops should, if possible, last no longer than 2 hours. So initially when I was a signaller, they didn't explain that to me, and I was on until I began without hallucinating, without heat, without sleep. Oh dear. Chapter 12. Get the motorized troop. Get through by determination. If a man can pass, so can a motor vehicle. If a road is too narrow, cut a way through it. If there's a cliff in the way, let 40 or 50 men in a bunch haul you up it. Motor fuels get through by determination. Force your way ahead, even if you have to carry the thing on your shoulders. This is actually true, that Japanese tanks were so light you could actually pick them up. If the vehicle, is the vehicle in good running order? It only requires a single bolt or nut to work loose or fall off, and the vehicle may move no more. No matter how tired you are, check the grease thoroughly. Do not break down in your moment of peril. Oil, water and air, are they alright? Is the battery charged? A drop of petrol is a drop of blood. This is 3. Petrol is the lifeblood of motor fuels. Without it, they cannot move. Since petrol evaporates quickly in hot climates, do not open the throttle too wide. Starting is easy, so switch off the engine as soon as you come to a halt. 4. Do not work the engine recklessly. Do not shoot off at high speed as soon as you have started the engine. The oil, being warm, has become thin. On asphalt roads especially, the heat is intensified by reflection from the surface. If you suddenly increase the revolutions, the speed of the oil will cause a fire. Drive gently or slow, at least for 5 minutes, when they get wet. If salt water enters the crankcase, change the oil at once. If you leave things as they are, the water will be drawn up into cylinders with a rusted pistons and cylinders walls and result in fire. If caught in a squall, it doesn't matter if you get wet, but see to it that no water gets to various electrical fittings. If it does, wipe them dry immediately, oil and water. When the oil heats up in hot water weather, it becomes thin and loses viscosity. In this state, it washes down into the crankcase the soot on the piston heads, which cleans the cylinder walls. Consequently, you can not assume that all is well simply because the oil is sufficient quantity. Test the oil for viscosity between trips with your fingers and thumb and examine its colour. If it's dark with soot, it must be changed. So I often see people get some oil and rub it in their fingers and even smell it. Examine the cooling water whenever you stop. Keep it constantly replenished. If you do not use water with any salt, take a supply of good water with you when you start out. Cherish your weapons. Chapter 13. Let's see. Can this go very far? Oh, it goes on and on. And I'm going for 30 minutes. I'll try. Chapter 13. Cherish your weapons. Rust, mildewed, misting. Rifles, like soldiers, dislike heat. When the soldier rests, they should give their rifles a rest too, offering them, in place of water, large drinks of oil. Parts containing air or water recoil buffers expand. The precision weapon suffers markedly deterioration in accuracy. Iron rusts, leather, mildews, glass, mist. If you give constant attention to your equipment, your weapons prevent such deterioration. Keep the gas cylinder lock at its lowest marking. Since breech mechanisms are automatic, weapons move very freely in high temperature. You should keep the gas cylinder lock at its lowest marking. Furthermore, I remember the SLR having a little gas thing that you could turn it around so it could fire grenades. Furthermore, you should use lubricant with high heat resistant qualities and, if necessary, drain some off to reduce quantity. See that the binoculars and optical mechanisms do not moisten. Since binoculars and all types of optical mechanisms are particularly sensitive to extreme heat, care must be taken to protect them. A sudden change in temperature, too, is considerably lower the degree of accuracy, perhaps causing moisture to form the lenses. It's important to wrap them in cloth at night and prevent great variation at night-day temperatures. Chapter 14, Provisions. Water supplies and disinfectants. You can get dirty water anywhere, but pure water is not readily available. Since the natives defecate and urinate quite freely in all lakes and streams, even the water which the natives use for drinking is full of germs. It's safest to drink only water which has been properly purified by filtering. Furthermore, do not neglect to take creosote pills regularly. If you discover the source of good drinking water, see that no one defiles it. And necessary, set sentries to watch over. When you are perspiring heavily, drink warm tea with about 0.8% salt dissolved in. To disinfect wells, place chloride of lime in an empty body. Add the water, shake the mixture until the mixture is clear, pour the contents into the well. When the water drawn has a faint taste of chlorine and lime, it's safely disinfected. Okay, so I don't think that's calcium chloride, it must be. Yeah, it's weak calcium chloride. How do you keep cooked cereals from going stale? Pour boiled rice. Pure boiled rice is better than rice and barley hash. Water and rice. Wash rice well before boiling. After cooking until firm, allow some time for the moisture to evaporate before packing the rice into your container. It's better to cook in a mess tin than a large pot. Take 2 or 3 salted plums with each meal. When cooking, it's best to add a little salt, a salted plum, or a small quantity of vinegar. 1 preservative tablet should be added to each mess tin of rice during cooking, whatever that means. Wash mess tins and rice baskets in boiling water and dry thoroughly before packing them with rice. When carrying enough for 2 meals, pack each meal separately. In packing, you should pack lightly. If it is possible, place a piece of hemp cloth between the lid to absorb moisture.
Attach mess tins and rice baskets to the outside of your pack. Protect them from with leafy sprigs, etc. When you rest, do not expose them to the sun's ray. A substitute food, dried or tinned goods are recommended, but do not open tins until immediately before the meal. Store all metal rations for the march in a dry bag. All between rations in the bag. Not metal, but between meals. Keep the cooked rice in the cellophane is extremely effective. What fruits to eat? Use fruits can have great nutritive value. The following types of fruits are dangerous and must not be eaten. Those of excessively vivid colours, those of strong scents, sweet or saccharine taste, and beauty and shape, growing low in bushes amid beautifully coloured mottled leaves. When eating mangoes, do not drink goat's milk or spirits at the same time. Whatever that means. We're at 20 minutes and going. Chapter 15. Hygiene. As previously explained, the tropical Cambodian war is waged against a whole army of diseases. Those which you should be particularly careful to avoid are malaria, sunstroke, beriberi, and snake bite. Besides this, there is a year-round danger through the tropics of such diseases as cholera, typhus, bubonic plague, smallpox, tuberculosis, and leprosy. Moreover, the enemy may, in desperation, resort to warfare by means of terrible germs. You must be constantly on your guard and refrain from innocuous use of foodstuff wells abandoned by the enemy. Incautious. Perhaps because the heat drives even dogs mad, there is a large instance of rabies. If you are bitten by a dog, you must report at once to your medical examination. How do you contract a malaria? Malaria is to be avoided at all costs. The success and failure of tropical campaigns has depended since ancient times on how far the disease can be checked. One new malaria case in one's own army is far more dangerous a source of infection than any number of cases among the natives. Report for examination and treatment early, not for your own sake alone, but for the sake of the whole army. Malaria is carried by mosquitoes. Malaria mosquito is almost non-existent in Japan, but breeds in large numbers all over the tropics. There are many varieties, but the easiest way to recognize them is that they are peculiar, keeping their hind quarters raised at rest. What is it? Their Wallaroo State greys. These are massive at Wallaroo State. Massive, massive mosquitoes, and they sort of fly in like choppers coming in. You might think that since the mosquito larvae are generally hatched in dirty stagnant water, malaria mosquitoes would have similar tastes. But malaria mosquitoes' habits are cleaner and dislike stagnant water. It is most commonly found near mountain streams or in places near the coast where the sea water and river water intermingle. Since mosquitoes are common in Japan in thick woods, you might expect them to be equally plentiful in jungle regions, but the malaria mosquito is rarely found in the jungle away from the sea. In Java, Malaya, in fact, there are even places where clearing the jungle has been restricted by law as a method of controlling malaria. Malaria mosquito is most active in dusk at midnight, but is less in evidence during the latter half of the night. There is a jungle mosquito too, but unlike the malaria mosquito, it's active throughout the day. You should be on your guard on the day too, since the bite of a mosquito can result in a fever. The most important, of course, is to hang your mosquito net at night. But precautions against being bitten at day are no less necessary. Take your anti-malarial medicine as directed, use your anti-mosquito kit, and apply anti-mosquito ointment. What is sunstroke? Sunstroke is a sickness caused by the sun's rays. People who are weak and state after illness, whose appetite is poor, who are suffering from insufficient sleep, or who are in chronic malarial cases should be particularly careful since it is they who are most likely to be victims of the sickness. The first symptoms of sunstroke is heavy sweating, a high temperature, a flushed face, but gradually sweating ceases, and vitality weakens, breathing becomes labour, the pulse rate quickens, the face turns pallid. The patient stumbles and seems ready to fall over at any moment. If at this stage the patient rests immediately in the shady spot, he will revive, but if nothing is done, he will lapse into unconsciousness and fall. Avoid sunstroke. Best preventatives is ample stocks of drinking water, sufficient sleep, and a well-filled stomach. If someone gets it, what do I do? Unhitch his pack, remove his clothing, lay him down in the shady spot where there's a breeze, keep head raised, fan him, give him water to drink, and splash cold water over his body. If breathing is weak, apply artificial respiration, keep him quiet, and even when he is revived do not allow him to move for some time. Do not be bitten by snakes. Tropical snakes of many varieties are all equipped with deadly poison. If you do not take immediate countermeasures when bitten, the possibility is that you will die. Snakes are found in the greatest numbers in dense forests or highland or in vicinity of fresh water. They also live in the plains and branches of trees. Since they move away from the sight of man, soldiers in the vanguard may, without harm to themselves, clear a path of the following, for those following by walking along and beating the ground with bamboo poles. People are only bitten when they tread on a snake or accidentally grasp one together with a branch and a tree. When bitten, apply tight bandages immediately to affect the limb in between the wound and your heart. Oh no, that's not true. To prevent poison from flowing in that direction, pierce the wound with a small knife and suck fairly large quantities of blood with your mouth. And this is out of date, unfortunately. I think we had that. I think we didn't even have that in the Eastern Army. You had to just pressure the wound. You must receive treatment for the medical orderly. Since the treatment varies to the type of snake, it's vitally important that you should be described the snake that bit you. Do not get beriberi. Beriberi is a chief disease arising from vitamin deficiency. Particularly easy to contract in tropics. Do not exist on unbalanced diets. Eat as much fresh vegetables and fruit as you can. I don't know what beriberi is. This is 8. Hygiene for horses. If you do not exercise great care with horses until they have become accustomed to the heat, they will quickly weaken. First thing you watch out for is sunstroke, heatstroke, laminitis. Many horses are also affected by trypanosoma infection caused by worms in the bloodstream. Prevent the occurrence of this disease. The most important part of the horse is hygiene in the tropics. Okay, we're getting the boons dogs for this, but... Okay, we're actually coming to the end of this. It's great. During the attack, such terrain provides opportunity. Oh, what's this? Okay. Now, this is horses' game. Okay. Value horses. Horses cannot speak. Oh, no matter how hot it is or how thirsty they are, they do as they're told and work until they die. They deserve your sympathy and loving care. Things to remember are, fill their stomachs full, give them plenty of green grass and hay. If there are no cereals available, rice, stalks and straw will do. Anything which the horse will eat is fodder. Give the horse fresh water several times a day, but do not forget to give them salt to lick. Do not move their heads. On the move, their heads should be protected from the sun rays by sunblocks and the use of grass and leafy branches. Whenever possible, it's best for them to rest by day and move by night. Sunstroke and heatstroke. The most dangerous disease of the horse is very similar to sunstroke for humans begin to suffer. Breathing becomes quick and they break out in a sweat all over the body. Horses soon lose spirit and even if you rest them, they will continue to hang their heads desperately and refuse food. Best preventatives of sun hoods and grass branches and plenty of water and fodder and salt to improve their digestion. Laminitis or founder. The disease of the horse, including severe lameness, which occurs strenuous activity in the heat and after long train or boat journeys. At times, it's brought on by the same causes responsible for sunstroke and heatstroke. A feature of the disease is the lameness is not discernible while the horse is walking. It only becomes clear and noticeable when the horse stands at rest. For on-the-spot treatment, it is good to cool the hoofs in water, stop feeding cereals, and give them more grass and hay. What is the trypanosoma infection? The infection disease carried by flies and mosquitoes is confirmed in confined to hot countries. It affects cattle and dogs besides horses. When the animals contract this disease, they are liable, like chronic malaria sufferers among the human beings, to occasional bouts of high fever. Their spirit flags, their blood gradually deteriorates, and in many cases they die. The best way to prevent disease is to divide the men protecting the horse as far as possible from horse flies and other insect bites. The use of water oxen and Chinese oxen. Water oxen are massively built but comparatively gentle beasts. They are practiced in movement through marshy ground over great strength. When loading things on them, place the load on the rump. Once every hour, throw water over them and rub their bodies with mud. For food, give them hay, green grass and a small quantity of cereals. But it's important to allow them about 2 hours to ruminate after the feed. Chinese oxen should be treated as much as Japanese oxen. It's viable not to wear or use anything red, as oxygen generally dislikes this colour. Well, there you go. I think that's just old wives' tale, all put up into this. Chapter 29. Let's see if I can go for 40 minutes on this. In the tropics, bamboo groves, jungles, sugarcane plantations, so movement in special terrain. In the tropics, bamboo groves, jungles, sugarcane plantations are common. Movement in these is much or is laid down on forest land. Apart from attention to the unusual anti-gas and fire precautions, a cloth should be tied across the mouth and nose, and gloves should be worn to give protection from thorns and brambles. Below are given certain points on which special care should be taken. Movement in bamboo groves. In bamboo groves differ from those in Japan in that any number of bamboo canes grow in a cluster from one trunk. They are spiked with thorns, and so it's impossible to step into their midst. When traversing bamboo groves, most move through the area where the bamboos are least dense and lop off the lower branches to make cuts in the trunks so the white sections will serve as root markers. You should make a frontal attack on a bamboo grove. It's best to consider rush from close quarters. When using bamboo groves as defense, they are conveniently employed either as obstacles or for concealment. But there is a disadvantage in that respect. There is a terrible noise of enemy bullets crashing through the bamboo, can be demoralizing effect upon troops. Movement in jungle. By jungle, it's meant dense forest with a very large variety of trees, grasses, and thorny plants that are closely entangled together. Such places are the haunts of dangerous animals, poison snakes, harmful insects, and since this is extremely difficult terrain, passive retreats will be necessary to form special operation units for the task. This type of terrain is regarded by weak-spirited Westerners as impenetrable, and for this reason, in order, you must outmaneuver. We must, from time to time, force our way through it. With the proper preparations and determinations, it can be done. Maintenance of direction and good supplies of water are supremely important factors. Yeah, so what's Kanungra School of Jungle Warfare? What? So it's actually, the worst thing is actually the boundaries of jungles. They're the hardest. Once you get into them, they're reasonably okay. Movement in sugarcane plantations. The movement through sugarcane plantations are very similar to caroling fields in Manchuria. Oh, thanks you. So you are very experienced troops. Special care must be exercised to maintain correct directions. For this, scouts should be sent ahead to mark a trail, either carrying ladders or surveying the land from tree tops. The use of compasses might also provide advantageous. What else are they doing? Well, this is, I won't go a few tricks we have. During an attack, such terrain provides opportunities for detours or outflanking movements of a local nature. In defense, considerable obstacles can be constructed by breaking off lengths 40 to 80 centimeters of sugarcane and binding them with rope crisscrossed in a higgledy-piggledy to steel wires. Movement in marshy land and paddy fields. In French Indochina and Thailand, come close to Japan in the intensive cultivation of rice and their paddy fields everywhere. There is also large stretches of marshland, and traversing such terrain, it's often best for each man to be equipped with snowshoes and poles, and for heavy armaments to be pulled along with sledges and covered with sugarcane straws or hurdles. When advancing with snowshoes, you should pause between movements as little as possible to avoid sinking the mud. And if the shoes should become deeply wedged, you should take the full weight with your body on the poles and slowly extract the shoes one at a time. Whenever possible, you should pick your way along places where the rice is stubble to support you and the mud is dried. Field of mountain artillery, when on the ground to be traversed, is only slight damage, will be manhandled across if the wheels are fitted with tank tracks. Okay, chapter 18, conclusion. And there's a little poem at the end of it. How long does this conclusion go for? Okay, my godfather. At stake in the present war, without a doubt, is the future prosperity and decline of the empire. Slowly, little by little, like a man strangling his victim with a soft cord of silk and frost, America has been prohibiting export to Japan over oil and steel. Well, Welcome to America Again. Why such cautious method? The reason, perhaps, is fear that tonight all supplies in one stroke might drive Japan in desperation to invade South Asia. If the rubber and tin is that the South were to be seized by Japan, it would create a situation that was intolerable to America, even the present lack of steel and oil is to Japan. America's policy has been one of weakening Japan without rousing violence, indignation. And I think they're probably doing that today. We have already, perhaps, left things too late. If we remain patient a moment longer, Japan's aircraft, warships, and transports will be forced to a standstill. 5 years have passed since the outbreak of the China incident. And I understand they use incident all the time. More than 100,000 of your comrades have perished on the mainland, and the greater part of the armaments with Chiang Kai-shek killed, those men were sold to them by England and America. England and America, whose desire to hold the Far East as a permanent state of subjugation and colonization, dread the thought of any solidarity between Asian peoples. And for some time, their policies have been directed towards the instigation of war between Japan and China. Our allies, Germany and Italy, are engaged in a life-death struggle with England, America, and the Soviet Union, European continent. America, having given full support to England, is already virtually participant in the war. For the sake of Japan's own existence, and because of our moral obligations as members of the Tripartite Alliance, it's impossible for us to endure the present situation a moment longer. We embark upon the great mission which calls upon Japan, as the representative of all peoples of the Far East, to do a resolute final blow to centuries of European aggressions in this land. Our peerless Navy is prepared and ready to strike at full strength, the formula indicating the numerical strength in relation to the fleets of England and America is 3 to 5 to 5, but if you include the calculation superior of equipment and morale, the ratio becomes 7 to 5 to 5. Half the British fleet, moreover, has been destroyed by Germany, and as far as our Navy is concerned, now is a great opportunity. The umbilical cord of Chiang Kai-shek regime runs to England and America. If this is not speedily cut, the Sino-Japanese war will drag on endlessly. The final reckoning of our holy crusade will come to the battlefields ahead. Hundreds of thousands of heroic dead will be watching over us. The supreme offering for which the souls of your departed comrades are long for this victory in battle. To show your heartfelt gratitude to the Navy, which is dominating thousands of miles of ocean, sweeping the seas clear of enemy obstacles and protecting us day and night with tireless devotion, we must requite such labours with comparable fruits of battle. We Japanese, heirs to 2,600 years of glorious past, have now, in response to the trusted placed upon His Majesty Commander-in-Chief, has risen the cause of the people of ages and embarked upon a noble and solemn undertaking which will change the course of the history of the whole world. Officers and men, and the eyes of the whole world will be upon you this campaign, and, working together in community of spirit, you must demonstrate to the world the true worth of the Japanese manhood, the implementation of the task and Showa Restoration, I'll have to really research that, which is to realise His Imperial Majesty's desire for peace in the Far East and to set Asia free, rests squarely on your shoulders. And here's the poem again. Corpses drifting swollen in the sea depths, corpses rotting in the mountain grass, we shall die by the side of our Lord, we shall die, we shall not look back. And that close on 40 minutes, which I'm trying to get to, is the conclusion of the pamphlet.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.